Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. I'm Leah Gross, founder of Circle Care Services. I'll bring you autism experts from all kinds of fields for helpful parenting ideas, insights, and strategies. Tune in for learning and support and connection. Hi, Joanna. Welcome to the Autism Roundtable podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to ask you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your relationship to the autism community.
Hi. Yes. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. So I work with children on the autism spectrum throughout the whole entire spectrum. My main focus is supporting parents of children that are on the spectrum, because I feel like they get a little bit of loss and they're not given the love and support that they deserve as well as their children.
I love that. So in what capacity are you working with them? Which field are you in?
So I'm an occupational therapist. I work with clients local to me in person at their homes or park or grocery store, wherever they need the work done. And I also work virtually through coaching. I call it like fly on the wall sessions. Where I'll kind of be in their earbuds with a little view of the room to kind of coach parents through play and interaction and how to just stay calm, relax, leave them, let them keep going. I even do virtual sessions as well with parents and their children.
That's amazing. So you've set out and you've created like a parenting coaching program that you have felt like you had success with the parents. So could you describe that to us? Tell us a little bit about what it's about and who it's helping.
Yeah, so the program is called Skyrocket Success. It's a 90-day transformation program that I take parents and their children through to get them on a strength-based success plan, accomplish their goals, grow acceptance in areas, change programming of what maybe you thought your life would be when you decided on family planning to what it is now and how to accept that and love that and thrive in that.
Well, that's a really tough topic because there is a lot of acceptance that needs to happen, right? When we get that knowledge, information from wherever it is at whatever time period it is, like, hey, you're on a different path. So what are things that you tell parents that you suggest to parents to help them through that time?
Yeah. So as I am a coach for parents and children as well, I do recommend getting yourself a coach, therapist, whatever works for you, get your support in place just as you're doing for your child, getting their supports in place. You're working on usually getting them some ABA therapy, speech, occupational therapy, maybe physical therapy, music therapy, extracurriculars. The amount of effort you're putting into setting up like their success plan, you need to be doing the same for yourself. So make sure that you have self-care in place every day, whether it's you go to the gym in the morning, yoga at night, maybe you do some breath work, quick little meditations, 5-10 minute meditations, or listening to affirmations before maybe picking them up from an appointment, right after dropping them. Like, work that into your day the same way you're working all this extra into their day.
That's amazing. And as moms, I feel like we really need to remember sometimes about ourselves. Like, it's children, we know it's our job. We got to take care of them. We got to nurture them. But in order to be a wholesome parent and have the, focus and attention and mental health, well-being in our minds to give back to our children, like, we really have to take a step back. And I love the different options that you are suggesting. If a mother was looking, wanted, more information on where to find these things and how to tap into them, what would you tell the mom?
Yeah, I would say you could definitely look locally, reach out locally if you're looking for support. You can join my community at Sensational Students on Facebook if you'd like, and find the groups that work for you. And I would say, if you're exploring different groups, right, because we all do that, we like to explore our different options, make sure that they're positive options. You want to be associated in groups with parents and support that are accepting and looking to thrive, not kind of focusing on, oh, like the more of the victim role. You want to be with thriving parents, wanting to succeed, wanting their children to do well, looking to find their acceptance for themselves. And that's going to get you along the furthest. Moms that are practicing self-care, not running around trying to get the award for busiest mom.
Right. And there's value in that too, right? Like sometimes we think like, Oh, if we're going to get our kid an extra this and an extra that, and I'm going to enroll them in an extra soccer, but then we run ourselves so ragged at that, but then they come home and it's time for mom and child interaction. And that is a really important time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not ready for it.
I always say that first too with parents, like when you come home from your day, you should both, all right, maybe you get a minute or two to just put your bag down. But then you should spend time together, downtime together, whether you're reading, I call like to have a book and do some couch cuddles, watching a short age appropriate show on a television, on the wall, not in your lap, on an iPad, playing with inanimate objects like Legos, free play, like really just engage with them with zero expectation of what you expect to happen. And it really is magical when you really step back, like leave your phone in your purse. Don't even take it out yet when you get home. Check it again when you go to bed and everything is done for the night.
That's a huge one. I do feel like our phones are very distracting and it's a rough one. You know, it is engaging with our mind and, you know, we get all that dopamine like going out when we're engaging with it. But to really stop and be in the moment and enjoy the moments with our children. And they feel it. They feel it when we're sitting down on the floor and engaging with them and making that eye contact and really being there with them. That is maybe even more important than bringing them to, you know, all the different lessons that we think that, you know, is important, because that engagement with your child is telling them, I love you. So I love that piece. That is great.
Yeah, it's huge. If you can even just do one thing, just don't use the phone after you get home. Unless you're expecting an emergency call from someone, you do not need it. You don't need it. And your kids will notice, and you'll notice an energy shift also in yourself. I even say too, if you're out driving the kids around, no phone. You don't need to check Instagram at a red light. Don't even pick it up. Leave it in the back seat. Leave it off. You don't even need the ringer on.
Exactly. And as a parent, you become less frustrated when I'm in the middle of answering a text right now. Why are you interrupting me, right? How many times do you hear that? I'm on the phone with somebody. Don't you know that you need to wait? No. For the child, I'm the most important person in the room. You're sending me a message that I'm not important. So if we take it away, A, we give a really good message to the child, but B, for ourselves, we're so much less frustrated because we're able to give our whole focus to the child. So that is, I love that point.
Especially with the children too on the spectrum, they learn a lot sometimes by observing. They're so observant. Their sentences are so heightened. So even when you think they're not attending to what you're doing, they definitely are. You know, they may look like they're not engaged with you at all, but they're watching, they're learning. And if that's what they're seeing you do, that's what they're going to want to do.
Do as I do, not do as I say, right? And we really see that very, very strongly in children. Like whatever you're doing, they're copying it. And when you're on your phone and then you're like, oh, no technology, I want you outside. Like, but you're on your phone, right?
Yeah,
so exactly. Also being an amazing model is really important when parenting. Okay, so you touched on the topic of like accepting the diagnosis and how that may impact a parent. Do you want to expound on that?
Yeah, I think this is one of the hardest things for a parent. It's what a lot of the parents I work with struggle with. Even myself struggle with it when I'm working with the kids. You just don't want to accept it. Or you have those moments where everything clicks for them. Like, oh, they did it. And then you just want them to keep doing it every single time again. Or they come out with some language. Or they communicate through their device in a way they haven't before. And you just latch on. You're like, I want more. Yes, they will come with more when the time comes, but acceptance is the hardest thing to kind of take on as a parent, right? We have these programs in our mind of what your family should look like, what your children should do, how that relationship is going to look. And when you start to accept that and really change that programming, live in the moment with them, disconnected from the technology, you kind of learn that they are fulfilling all of those things you want them to be. They are loving towards you. They do engage with toys and preferred items, you know? They'll have the blanket they carry around their whole life that turns ragged, that you cannot wash because it'll break apart. Like, those are things that typical children go through, and your child will go through them too. It's just a little bit different than those programs. And you're probably, depending on when you're having your children, right? That could be 20, 30 years of programming you need to change. And then having your family and society also, that weighs heavily on you too for the acceptance. But the quicker you can get to your own acceptance and rewrite those programs, rewrite those scripts for what your family will be, you'll see that it's really not so different as you think.
So I'm liking the way you're terming acceptance. Acceptance is pretty much ripping up the paper that has a list of expectations and understanding that each child is amazing for who they are, and not necessarily having a roadmap for them of what you expect, because they have so much goodness to give and they are such awesome and amazing people if we recognize them for their amazing traits.
Yeah, absolutely. And once you get to that spot, it just makes life easier. It takes a weight off your shoulders. And the people around you will accept more also.
Yes, yes, yes. That's for sure true. So you created this success-based plan for parents. You want to explain that a little bit to us?
Yeah, so the program is Skyrocket Success. It's a 90-day transformation program. I go through it with you, or I do have a total virtual option if you'd like. I'm there to support you every step of the way as a parent. And the recommendations in the program, it's 5 steps. The 5 steps don't take the 90 days, but we need at least 90 days to work in these new habits, which is the hardest part. And we start with small goals, your goals as a parent. We incorporate self-regulation. We incorporate the acceptance, awareness of our strengths and areas of improvement, and anything that I'm going to recommend that your child do or leads into their success plan based off of their strengths, you do it as well based off of your strengths. So you see that when you utilize your strengths to be successful, instead of focusing on the negative things or the things you can't do or the things you're not doing, you improve them while being successful at the same time. And that's a really good feeling to finish your days and feel, wow, I had a great day today. I accepted. I moved on quicker. We had a positive moment. We had probably more positive moments than negative, because I'm just coming with a different perspective and a different mindset. And I find that's what a lot of other coaching sometimes forgets. They forget about the parent. Okay, here's your child. Here's their plan. Do it, do it, do it. And there needs to be more of that support for the parent.
Yeah, and focus on the parent, because it's, you know, first you have to change yourself, right, before you can change the world. And the best way to make change is to change yourself. And then others will see and follow and, right, like, smile is contagious, all that stuff. But really, it's true. We could change ourselves. We cannot change the other people around us. We might have positive effects on them, but we're not changing them. As much yelling as we may do, as much negative feedback we may give, we're really not changing the child. The child comes with his beautiful package, her beautiful package of whatever it is that she is. And I love that focus on changing ourselves, changing our perspective to feel less overwhelmed and be ready to deal with the different challenges that are coming our way. That is great. Okay, so tell me how you got into the parenting while being an OT. So how did that come about?
Yeah, well, I love being an OT. I love working with the kids, and I found week by week, or coming in the children for the one or two sessions a week, wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. And the parents are like, what can I do at home? Give them a simple task. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. They're so busy. And when you're learning something new, you need that consistent guidance, and it's not consistent enough. One and two times a week is not really consistent enough for your child. So you do need carryover at home. And then you as a parent, now kind of taking on a little bit of that therapist teaching role, also need the support and consistency of how to work in these recommendations to your family routines. Sometimes it's not that you only have one child, you have many. So how can I work this into your routine? And the beauty of doing this also virtually is you can meet with mom, not after the session now when child is looking to run to the car and leave. Not like, oh, there was an accident, I gotta get going. You know, they can listen to these recommendations when they're ready, when they're regulated and open to learning and really sitting down with their time or their schedule and say, okay, where can I fit this into my routine? And if I can't, I need to prioritize. And like I said, just for a little bit, even in my program, 90 days, it'll start coming into habit and routine. And once you feel better about everything, you're just going to be happier. And you're going to say, wow, I can't believe I wasn't doing this
before. Yeah, happier and then a better parent, because you're in a better emotional state and a better mental place. Okay, so as an OT, what domains do you cover, and how could an OT help children?
Yeah, so as an occupational therapist, we cover a lot, a full spectrum. We'll work on motor skills, fine motor skills, gross motor skills, vision, executive functions. That's where you have impulse control and task sequencing, initiating a task. Auditory skills. Are they hearing directions? Why are they not following when I call them? Why are they not following the direction? We also work on anything self-care, independence. I like to just say, too, going through your routine. Can they get through your routine the way you're picturing it? Now, do we need to redraw that picture? Or what can we do to help them get through these routines independently? And we also work on leisure and hobby type activities. Do they functionally play? That's the job of a child. You're supposed to play, engage with things, learn from objects, learn from toys, want to watch what the adults are doing around the house. Again, that's why that detox from the phone comes into play, because you want them to take care of their room and clothes and laundry one day, so they better be seeing you take care of your clothes and laundry one day. Even cooking meals around the kitchen, eventually you're going to want them to help packing their lunch, even if it's taking snacks out of the cabinet into their lunch bag. If they're not seeing that happening, it's going to be harder to have them learn to do it too. And that is quite a full spectrum. We also will work on sleep patterns and sleep habits. That's another big one I get from parents. Sleeping is a tricky one, getting to sleep. It can sometimes just be your sleep routine that you need. Okay, so maybe the 2 hours before bed, but really that's your whole day's routine. It all kind of comes into play. So you can't just look at sometimes those 2 hours before bed, even though we want to just look at that as fostering positive sleep routines. It's your whole daily routine.
Yeah, and if a child doesn't sleep, then we do see increase in behavior.
Absolutely.
Throughout the day, you know, obviously I'm talking about negative behavior, but like, you know, if I don't sleep the night before, right, like had a flight or whatever it is, and then I didn't sleep, then the next day, don't talk to me. I need my coffee, and I just need very little stimulation. So we have to like really get into the minds of these children that are not sleeping. And it is such an important piece to solve. How do we get them to sleep? So I love that, like that take on that it's a full day. Would you like to speak to that a little more? Like, what would you recommend a parent start with on the sleeping?
Yeah, so sleep routines are imperative, right? We all know we need our sleep. And just as you mentioned, I like to also remind parents of this too. Sometimes part of that acceptance, right? Your child is lacking some understanding, maybe. They're not following daily routines. So you have to take all of this into consideration when you're looking at the sleep routine. And again, you have to rewrite that programming. Just because we made this awesome success plan together based off of areas of strength, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a week. It might not happen in two. You need to give it at least 4 to 6 weeks to really start kicking into place and seeing progress. So I also like to warn parents of that. When you're using strategies or ones that you see people recommend, you need to repetition and time to make it consistent. And like I said, too, it's your whole day, your whole circadian rhythm, too. As you mentioned, think of when you don't sleep well or you're up all night or just things make you more anxious. Sometimes I like to relate it. It's easy for parents to the day before like a vacation. You have so much on your mind. You're excited. It's kind of like a good nerve, but you still don't sleep. You're kind of irritable the next day, but you have this great motivating task, right, that you're going to get to. So you are able to regulate and modulate how you're getting through your day. But then one little thing goes wrong and now you're panicked. Kind of picture your child, right? They're not, especially on the spectrum, we're not processing the environmental stimuli properly already. So we're already like dipping low in our cup of coping chemistry. Naturally, that's how their body runs. And then you're not sleeping well. And now you have someone like forcing the sleep routine. We have to do the book. It's 7 o'clock. We have to get to the book. Book time. Or we're not going to get to sleep. That energy is going to transfer. It's going to add pressure to the situation. Okay, it's fine. 7:15 is not going to hurt, right? We've already not been sleeping for maybe years, maybe months. Maybe we're in a downslope. It will turn back around. But having that calm energy about it and getting through your day, waking up at a usual time. Okay, they didn't sleep good and they finally slept. Okay, maybe 10 extra minutes and a gentle wake up is going to help them. And your meals, if they're not really big eaters during the day, that's going to affect sleep. So that's where that whole daily plan comes in, making sure you're getting meals. Maybe change the time of dinner if they're more of a picker. Maybe make it a little bit later. Maybe make it a little bit earlier. Going to bed with a full stomach might feel better for them. So that's why you really have to look at that.
Or another one is the actually eating at meals. Like a lot of times our children are come to the table. We as parents made the plate, right? I always say if I prepared it and the child decides not to eat it, right? But really sitting with the child back to engagement while they're eating and maybe talking to them about their day or reading them a book, but like making sure they really sit for a good 5 to 10 minutes at each meal and consume the food instead of touching it and running is also so important, because if we're not eating our meals, then we're hangry. You know, that's.
Yeah, your body's just not regulated. You're not in a good balanced state to fall asleep.
Amazing. Okay, and then you just touched on some leisure and social engagement. Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, everyone needs to have their hobbies. That's also something that regulates us, gives us good coping chemistry, you know, fills up our emotional cup and makes us feel good. So it's important for our children to have that as well. I know as adults, I'm definitely a gym person. I like to go play sports. I have that worked into my week. Kids might like to play with Legos. On the spectrum too, maybe your child their kind of happy zone is stimming. Sometimes that's refilling their cup of coping chemistry for them. So you need to figure out how to work that into your day for them too. And keep in mind, like when I'm going out to the gym or maybe I want to take a yoga class or maybe you do just want to scroll on your phone. If that's what works, I don't support it. But if that's what works for you, then that's what works for you. And I do support that because it's your plan, right? Think of the amount of time you give to those activities too. I know as OTs, we like to recommend tactile activities. They increase dopamine, serotonin, they're calming. And the parent gives the...
What are some tactile activities?
So that would be kind of playing with like manipulatives, Play-Doh, a bean or rice bin, even fidgeting with that big bucket of Lego can fall into that category. I love sensory swings, like the cuddle swings give nice tactile pressure. And also think too, right? You're going to the gym for how long? Are you going for 5 or 10 minutes? You're not.
No.
You're going for an hour plus. So think of the time that you give to them. And then when you're thinking about how much time you can allot to them doing that, also keep in mind, they're going through most of their day kind of getting very low on their coping chemistry. So almost going through the day where for you as an adult, you were really sick. You had the flu, but you had to go to work anyway. And you just, made it through every day. They're kind of experiencing that every day. So think of how much they actually do need to refill their cup.
So I love that topic. So would you be able to explain the sensory body of a child not feeling within their given body, and why their threshold might be that they feel like they have the flu all day? Like, what brings them to that point?
Yeah. So again, they do have on the spectrum, right? You have a different, even some children with ADHD or struggling with a dyslexia sometimes have this feeling in their body. It's not processing right. And we see that in some of their behaviors. We might see it in stimming. We might see it in the sounds that they make, their preferred toys that they have, their trouble paying attention and engaging. So we see that they're uncomfortable. And you as an adult, you know that uncomfortable feeling. We have to go through extremes if you're quite neurotypically developed of having that flu or being really sick, or maybe you just got off that 10-hour flight and you didn't sleep and now you're on a time change and you are on the struggle bus. You know, like they're feeling that in and out of their day just because they don't process that sensory stimuli properly. And as much as we do, again, want to change that for them and we try, you're probably only going to get it to be to a certain point. And that's okay. We have external things we can do, right? Sometimes you'll see kids with headphones, carrying around preferred objects or fidgets in their hand, sensory breaks, maybe blowing bubbles before they get out of the car to get some deep breaths in. Music is a really big one that helps a lot of families and children to regulate. Maybe it's just the quiet time in the car. That's a lot of stimulation, and right? So you're not feeling well and everyone's nagging you at work. Your phone's going off the hook. Your boss just changed the deadline for you to get stuff done. And you feel that boil up in your body. That's what they're feeling. And right, more that so frustration. On a daily basis.
And how often does this happen to a child? So you mentioned, let's say you go to the gym for an hour and your cup is full. You got your sensory input. For a typical child struggling with ADHD, sensory processing disorder, autism, how often should a child be looking to get that, and how often is okay?
Yeah, great question. So this is going to be very individualized to your child. I like to use that, right? When you go to the gym, you're spending an hour as like perspective. So think of when you get home from school, then you have these demands of maybe homework or wanting them to do something so you can get something else done, or even throughout your school day, you're taking that solid hour for yourself. They might not get that solid hour, but maybe they need half hours throughout their day. Maybe their day works best where they're on for a half hour, kind of learning, tolerating demands, and then maybe they're off for the next half hour. Like, it's okay to give it that time. They need that time and deserve that time, just like you deserve your time. So definitely plan for it to be different. Again, that acceptance comes in, and longer than you think. If they're exploring and quiet and at peace, you can almost see their bodies too sometimes when they're playing, especially in some of those tactile type bins or toys. You'll see them just be relaxed. You'll hear the changes sometimes in their sounds too, if they're nonverbal. You'll hear the change and see the change. You'll see their breath change. Let them be in that space. Because also think too, okay, I see them. They're getting calm. All right, they're calm. Let's go. Well, now you just heightened them back up again, you know? So, yes.
And I like what you had said earlier, that sometimes when we model being calm and we show our children how we calm ourselves, a lot of times they'll sort of try and mirror that. And if we're heightened and we're running around the kitchen and yelling while we're packing the briefcases, right, we're modeling that kind of behavior as well. And then to them, that's what they're okay with that. So that's great when you get some calm place. When we're in like a really heightened place where the child's constantly yelling, constantly tantruming, constantly, you know, in a heightened mode, where would you tell a parent to start in helping that child to regulate?
Yeah. First, I would say for you as a parent, take a deep breath or do what you need to do to relax. Stay as calm as you need to. And remind yourself that they are not doing this to you. They're not having this behavior to make you feel bad, to embarrass you. They're truly struggling. Sometimes they'll even recommend to a parent, children tend to get angry in the same way. Some are more like growlers, you know, clenching their fist. You may see some flapping, body tensing, tightening up onto their toes. Whatever behavior they tend to go to, also I tell parents, do that yourself and just kind of feel what that feels like in your body. Or the cry, if they're crying, think of when you've cried like that. Takes a while to also recover from that. So again, it comes to acceptance, get down at their level, and just be present with them. Just be there for them.
That's a tough one. Feeling like the child is punishing you or doing it to you. That's something that I feel like we all kind of know in our brains that our children are not trying to punish us, are not trying to be difficult. But as parents, we do sometimes feel like, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
So any tips or advice on how to reframe?
Kind of how you just said it. You have to just take that first breath and say, they're not doing this to me. Like, they're going through something. Even like Dr. Ross screams, if a child could, they would. You know, do you think your child wants to feel that tension and anger and fire in their body? They don't. Just like you don't, they don't. So just think, okay, what could this be? And that'll help you be more accepting.
More accepting. Love it. Love it. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the different fields as an occupational therapist that you treat in. I wanted to hear a little bit more about gross motor. What does it mean and how does that affect the child through the day?
Great. Yes, gross motor skills. So I like to incorporate into the gross motor, that's moving your body. That's how you feel in space. You need your gross motor skills. We need our core strength. And a lot of parents will say to me, I get this one a lot, like, they're so strong though.
Yes.
I agree. Yes. That doesn't mean they're not strong if you hear a therapist wanting to work on that core strength or balance. That means they might not be engaging it in the right way. And a lot of the time when they're coming maybe at you strong or playing and showing that strongness, they're kind of in a state of fight or flight. So there's a lot of adrenaline behind that strength, which we're all very strong when we're coming with a fight or flight response. So gross motor skills, bilateral coordination is a big one that is hard to notice. Can they use their right and left sides of their body at the same time? Sometimes that even comes down to, I want them to brush their teeth. That's a big activity. Seems very nominal, something we need to do every day, but there's a lot going on with teeth brushing. You have something in your mouth, so something in your body. You have a lot of sensory with the bristles. You need to use one hand and like your head's kind of moving. So again, sometimes I consider the vestibular part of that gross motor. Can you keep your balance while you're moving? Maybe your whole body's moving side to side as you're brushing or just your hand. Maybe you need to stabilize your body with your non-dominant hand on the countertop and lean over the sink to brush your teeth. There's a lot going on. Or mom comes over to help and now she's taller than you. So now your head has to tip back. You don't have the balance for all of this at once. Remember all the steps that really go into it. And this is all around that gross motor skill, being secure in your body and able to use both sides of it. So taking a task where we might see that as a little fine motor task. Oh, brushing their teeth, fine motor. No, it's a very gross task that we have to do. and sometimes why kids are hesitant to participate sometimes.
Yeah, that actually falls into fine motor, falls into sensory, and yes. It falls into self-care. So now that you're touching on self-care with the teeth brushing, I'd love to hear what OTs work on with self-care and maybe what our expectations at each age should be as a mom when we're, you know, when we're trying to encourage our children to be independent. What are expectations that are fair? And how do we meet them?
Yes. So for self-care, fine motor skills, fine motor involved in self-care would be more like eating and feeding, right? You're going to want to see them pinching at their foods. You don't want to see them making that big raking motion at their foods. But again, if they have some sort of diagnosis or we know they're struggling in some area, don't force it. Don't force a fork in their hand. Or I've seen parents want to like block certain fingers so they're only using others. They're going to need to develop that at their own pace. But again, you're going to start kind of picking at those finger foods around like 6 months, right? You're going to start wanting to pick at things, put things in their mouth. And between that age of like 1 and 2, you're really going to start getting more involved in dressing, helping lift your leg to put into your pants. Kind of even when they're laying, if they're still not potty trained yet and you're doing pull-ups or what have you, if you hold the pull-up out, and you can help them with this too, right? Maybe you're holding it open. Can they even lift that leg to get it in to the hole? Or are you facilitating that movement with the way you're presenting the pull-up to them? Similar with putting arms through sleeves, getting dressed. Again, you want this all happening in like those toddler years. You're really starting all of this self-care. Dressing, managing your clothes up and down for toileting, socks and shoes on and off, attending to the laces, but you don't need to start tying them at 3, just attending that that's happening. I do suggest parents, if you want your kids to tie shoelaces, have shoes with laces.
But don't be too hard on yourself. Don't start the laces till 5, 6 years yes. old because
yeah, there's no need to rush certain things either. And I like to say, if you're teaching dressing or you want your child to improve with dressing, take those few moments for yourself and see, wow, am I facilitating this or are they? Even sometimes head through. And again, if they had a rough day, help more. That's okay. If you're holding up the shirt for them to get their head through, just wait. Can they put their head through it themselves or are they really waiting for you to put it over their body? So there's ways to help encourage that more than you think. We tend to do a lot more for our children too, just because, again, we're in a rush, we're overscheduled, and our priorities are in a billion other places.
Right. And I think that that's a huge key. If we slow down and we give them the time and we're not rushing out the door and it's back to us versus yes. the child, right? We really could encourage that and give them the time to learn. They need the time to learn how to put the hand through. And if yes. we're always in a rush and we're in anxiety, then they're feeling that and they're having the heightened anxiety.
With socks and shoes too, I can always tell if a parent is doing this at home or not, because I'll say, okay, let's get your socks and shoes. And if the first thing they do is sit down and hold their foot up in the air to me, I know that they're not practicing this at home. Because that's the position. I sit down, I hold my foot up, and mom just whoops it right on my foot.
Exactly. And yeah. You know what? We learn behavior. So if mom's always doing it, and then she stops and says like, oh, now it's your turn. All of a sudden,
yeah.
Maybe I still want that, like, you know, love, care, and not necessarily to have to do it myself. Okay. So, and then fine motor. Where do we see fine motor throughout the day, and at what point should we be concerned with our children's fine motor?
You're going to see your fine motor skills throughout your day, just in their interaction with play, like objects, items that they're going to come into play. So you'll see it during feeding and eating, grooming, holding on to their brush, brushing their hair, washing their face. I also incorporate vision is often lost. That's part of that fine motor skills. Our eyes are fine motor. Again, everything attached to your core, so it's all one big thing. Their play skills, stacking blocks, and again, sometimes they can pick up the block, so that fine motor skill is working, but then I can't stack it. So there's, that's then incorporating the vision and the whole body control, that hand eye coordination, latching onto your buttons and zippers is going to all be into that fine motor skill, even managing the socks if they're putting socks on their feet, and orienting their clothes. Do they notice, even, again, this is more of a vision piece, but do they notice the tag? Do they notice their sock is bunched up? They might feel it, but do they even know? This is kind of getting into that executive function. Do they know to correct it? And do they know right. that, oh, my hands can correct this? I can move the sock on my foot and fix it.
Love that. And what does fall under executive function?
Yeah, so executive functioning is going to work on a lot of that impulse control, planning and sequencing a task, initiation of a task. Like if you put a toy in front of a child, I'm looking at younger now, but if you put a toy in front, do they open it? Do they play with it? Do they dump it and then just run away because they don't know what to do with it? I know a lot of kids on the spectrum will often kind of learn this executive function. They want you to do it first. They'll often take our hands to do it first. That's part of their learning. They're watching you do it. They're getting comfortable with that object. We don't know what that object looks like for them in their head, which is why they're having you touch it first. No, you do it. I'm not sure yet. You do it. I'm not sure yet. Right? Just like if you're going to go bake something, you're like, I don't want to mess this up. And your friends are probably like, no, you do it. I don't want to mess it up. Right? They're having that feeling. I'm not sure. I just want to see what you do with it and then see what happens if it falls over. Maybe the noise bothers my ear. Working into that. And our older kids, you're going to see that executive function skill with the impulse control and task initiation. When you're called and given an instruction, okay, you just kind of said, go get your plate and put it on the table. And I only really process the table part. What do I do with the table? I don't know. I'll let it go.
I'll let it go.
You didn't hear the whole direction.
So that processing piece, sometimes when we give multiple directions at a time and the child can't process it all, so they're only going to hear like the first command or the last command. And then we might get frustrated because didn't I tell you to do that? But also like stopping and taking a step back and realizing that they're not trying to be bad. They just haven't heard it all.
They might have missed pieces of it. They heard maybe the part of the first command and part of the third. And then, okay, well, now that doesn't really make sense. So I'll just sit here.
Right. Because I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yes.
And all of these executive functioning skills also impact social. So if you're talking about like initiation or right, how would it impact the child socially as well?
Yeah. Again, you'll often see sometimes hesitation, especially with going into group settings or on the playground. I'll often ask parents, does your child go to the playground and are they getting in and engaging just like with the flow of the playground? Are they running up and down? Do they wait when someone's on the slide or are they pushing that child down because they're going next and I don't know how to wait. Boom, you're my way. I'm my way. You know, they don't see and process that. That's another human right there in front of them where they're just running through it. Or sometimes they'll be the run around. They just run around the perimeter and they're never quite getting into the game. They just tend to watch from the outside. Maybe in their mind, they're engaged in that game, but they're physically on the outside of the game.
Right. And they might not have those words or those skills to get there. And that's kind of blocking them. And when we say as parents, go play with Johnny, go play with so-and-so, we don't like stop and think what is involved in all the steps and go join the group basketball game for that child. There is so many pieces involved. There's initiation. There's
understanding the language is usually a really big one. That's when kids tend to get handsy, pushy on the playground, or they're just communicating through gesture and touch because I have trouble processing what you said. So I only caught pieces. So I don't understand. And my body's physically moving and I'm watching a lot of what's going on. So now I can't make words because I'm just so busy with other things. And I'm just going to like push you because you're kind of in my way and I can't say excuse me right now. So like push you to the side.
I don't have the words right now. So I'm going to just physically help you in the right direction.
Yes. Even us adults get like that, right? We're like, the word is just slipping me. But I know how to even just say that. So now you understand. Oh, she just forgot the word.
And I love that topic.
That language.
Right. And I love that topic too, because a lot of times people will come in to my clinic and they'll say, my child's very behavioral. And then they start explaining what the behaviors are. And, oh, it's always by playtime, or it's always, right? And then I tell them to take a step back and watch when they become behavioral. What happened before that? Like, where was the frustration and why did that happen? And a lot of times if we back it up, we realize kids are not bad. They're not looking to be bad. It's more all the pieces in the puzzle that are so difficult for them, and that they haven't yet developed those skill set, that it's really overwhelming. So Johnny's building a beautiful tower next to me, and I wish I could build that same tower, but my fine motors is not allowing me to do that. And my motor skills of figuring out how to do it. So if I knock down Johnny's tower, then I'll A, let out my frustration, and B, Johnny won't have that same beautiful tower, so I won't feel incompetent, right? So there's all those different things that, you know, when we just, you know, get upset at a child, and how to take that step back and reframe, yeah, frame how we're looking.
And that feeling you mentioned, I feel children of all ages, like, feel that a lot, that incompetence, or I don't know how to do that, and I want to. Or I'm too scared to try. We go through this every day as adults. And some of the time, we don't even try. So don't get mad at them for not wanting to try.
Yes, yes, yes. We have to be compassionate. Now, with us feeling so compassionate.
Yeah.
And with moms kind of putting it on ourselves, like, that we need to make the change. I do feel like a lot of guilt comes along with motherhood and this role. What would you say to parents that are feeling guilt, that are feeling incompetent?
I would tell them it's okay that they're feeling that way. It's natural to feel that way. Again, we have these programs of what our life and our family and our children should look like, how they should behave, their expectation. And there's nothing as a parent that you did wrong or are doing wrong to make your child act that way. It comes, you know, back around to the acceptance. It's so easy to accept sometimes a physical disability that we see, or even an injury you get. Oh, I hurt my ankle. I'm just going to take it easy in class today. And everyone's like, sure, okay, take it easy. Okay, well, I have this condition, and why am I not allowed to take it easy some days if I'm having a bad day? And that can be huge. You really need to do your own work. Like I said, get yourself a coach, counselor, whatever works for you as that outlet to process and to rechange your programming. The less shame and guilt you feel also, the better you're going to feel, because you're not going to take each of those as like a personal attack. Even just admitting that, wow, I do take that as a personal attack. I do. And that's okay that you feel that, and acknowledge it, accept it, and then rewrite that script for yourself.
Yeah, and I would say on the guilt topic that I've heard from a lot of parents that when they initially get the diagnosis of autism, they feel a lot of guilt as well. They start to look for different reasons. Why did this happen? Did I not feed my child properly? Was I not good during pregnancy? Did I not take my vitamins? What happened along the way?
Yeah.
And it's important for them to like take that step back and really reframe that. This is not about guilt. This is not about you. And almost kind of rewrite their stories.
Yeah, it's just, you really need to daily, hourly, if you need to, remind yourself that you didn't do anything wrong at all. Like, you're good, and you're doing everything you want for your child. Like, you're then, right, you kind of get these diagnoses, and you're like, okay, how can I help? Great. Like, stay in that mindset. Like, what can I do to help? What's going to be the best plan for success now? This is where we're at. Be in that present. Okay, I just have to accept that I can't change it.
Exactly. Move forward and be in the present. Yeah. Because if we're always looking in the rearview mirror, we can't be there today and we can't be the best parents that we want to be, because part of being the best parent is being present and having that emotional well-being to be there with our child. And if we are not being there for them because we're busy looking in the rear view and because we're so burdened with our guilt, that's a hard place to be in.
It is. Yeah. So the quicker you can get out of that, the better for you and your child.
Amazing. Okay. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all of this amazing knowledge. I'd like to end off with a message that you might have for caregivers of children on the autism spectrum. If you had one message to leave off with, what would it be?
Yeah, for all the caregivers out there, you are the brave heroes. Keep on going and just remember to accept it and really look for your strengths-based success plan and figure out what that is for yourself. It's going to change throughout the way. So ebb and flow with those changes and just enjoy the moments of happiness that you have along the way.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joanna, for coming on.
Thank you. It was great. Thank you for having me.